At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, it's Christine with Storyworthy. Today on the show, Jackie the Joke Man Martling talks about his time with Rodney Dangerfield.
Walk along Las Vegas Boulevard South. We're just about to the lead. He says, "You got to take a leak?" And instead of going into the lead, into the bathroom like a couple of human beings, we walk behind the lead where the dumpsters are. And the dumpsters are the size of a small McDonald's. And he walks over to this dumpster and takes it out and starts pissing on the dumpster. So what am I going to do? I'm over here. I take it out and I'm peeing on this dumpster.
Today on the show, the joke man himself, Jackie Martling, talks about his time in Las Vegas with Rodney Dangerfield. Stay close.
Hey, I'm Jackie Martling, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 11 flipping years, or you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys had a chance to listen to the episode last week with comedian and writer Danielle Koenig. Danielle told a nice, clean story. And what I mean is, like, the title was "My Roommate Went Crazy." So that's very, you know, we know what's going to happen. Her roommate, you know, her roommate lost it. So that's the story. And it was great. And it was a fun story. So I want you guys to go back, listen to Danielle Koenig, but not today. Not today. Stay where you are, because today I'm here with a really accomplished guy, Jackie the Joke Man Martling. Of course, we all know him from Howard Stern, and he's also done so much else. And Jackie brings forth the topic today, Las Vegas with Rodney Dangerfield. So I couldn't be more excited to hear this, first of all, Jackie.
Hello.
I'm so happy you're here. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I know you're very busy.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And I'll tell you, I've been telling this story for 40 years, and I'm sure there's a certain amount of people are going to go, "Not that story again," but it's just so good that I can't not. When somebody says, "Tell a story," you lead with that.
Yeah, great. Now, listen, you do go out and do a lot of comedy gigs, obviously.
Not like in the old day, you know, I do sometimes one a week, sometimes one a month, sometimes one every 2 months. But then you can't judge anymore, because during the pandemic, nobody was doing anything. And it's all just starting to come back. But like in the last couple of weeks, you know, I did Boston and I did, Pennsylvania. And, I went down to Florida. You know, slowly it's coming back, you know. But sure. But I'm old. I'm not anxious to go bing, 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 you know.
First of all, you're not old. You're not old, man. You look great. You really do. You got your whole head of hair. Your teeth look amazing. You look great. You're active. You're moving.
Wow. I got to write that all down. I got to write that down. I'll read that to myself every morning.
I guess what I'm saying is, as a comedian and a writer, it's not like you're an athlete. I mean, it's not like you have to perform. You know, you're not a gymnast. I mean, we never thought that. We know that you're a guy who, it's in your head. You're like a thinker.
Not for nothing, but do you know by any chance that I was a gymnast, or did you just happen to say that?
Oh, you know what? Now that you just said that, I did know that. You were in high school, right?
Yeah. I just thought that I didn't know if it was a coincidence or not. It's just funny. I wasn't any good, but it just was funny that you said that.
No, and I saw you on a YouTube video doing a handstand somewhere, walking on your hands.
I'm sure that's possible. It wasn't yesterday.
Yeah. Let me ask you. Of course, you are known as the joke man, and you do have thousands of jokes. Do you catalog them like Joan Rivers did hers?
My computer is bursting. I have endless, what are the things that, yeah, I'm so old.
You have notebooks.
Endless notebooks. I remember that I had the chills. I was freaking out because I knew when computers came into the fold, I was like, holy Christ, I'm going to have to type all this crap into the computer. And then they came out with the thing that scans things and put it right in the computer. Like, thank God, you wind up almost rewriting them anyway. But I have endless stuff. And I've written a handful of them. But for the most part, they're jokes that have been around forever and ever. But I'm a scholar of this. And people don't realize that there's very little new under the sun. And I'm working on a documentary called Jokes. Which it's so interesting who likes them and who doesn't like them. You know who was a huge fan of dirty jokes? Albert Einstein.
I heard that somewhere. He had a famous joke. What is it?
My dick is not that big, but I love every foot of it.
Yes, that's it. That's so funny. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
That's Albert Einstein. Come on. When I heard that,
Yeah, that's funny. But but that also goes with intelligence. Comedy goes with intelligence because, of course,
always
are a step ahead. That's the whole thing. They discover what everybody's thinking before they could enunciate it.
Yep. They get there first so they can turn around and say, welcome.
That's really funny. So let me ask you. The jokes, so many of them are from 30, 40 years ago that some of them really couldn't hold up today, right? In terms of
they're
racism.
Not from 30 or 40 years ago. They're from hundreds of, there's a joke that Rodney Dangerfield did that if you asked anybody, you say that is the quintessential Rodney Dangerfield joke that was created for his character. It's exact. And, there's this guy that collected all the jokes in the world that was very famous. They actually had him in the Aristocrats. His name was Gershon Legman. And the joke was from 1862 about two guys in the Civil War.
Amazing.
But it's the perfect joke for Rodney. Rodney said, yeah, my wife cut me down to twice a week. That's not so bad. There's a couple guys she cut out altogether. Which is so funny. And in the Civil War, it was a joke about rationing. And the guy says, yeah, they're rationing everything. My wife cut me down to twice a week. Another guy says, yeah, I know she cut a couple guys out completely. And that's 150 years ago. But the joke is made for Rodney because the right joke in the right place is, you couldn't write that better. You know what I mean?
No, so it's funny. It's hilarious. But yeah, every word's perfect and it sums it up perfectly. But what I'm saying is when you go out and do these cities, you go to Boston or you go to D.C. or wherever, you don't do that material on stage now. I mean, I know you do jokes, of course, but I mean, I'm specifically trying to get to the racist jokes or the ones that are homophobic.
I do. I've been doing the same thing for 40 years. It's gotten totally shaved down as far as, very, very little black jokes or Asian jokes or Polish jokes. But I do a smattering and just as a quick run. But what I do is so harmless and so obviously so harmless. But, some people, if you hit them with a feather, they're going to say, why are you so violent? So it's an endless discussion.
That's so true. I believe that.
Because somebody gets hurt. If there's a joke, somebody gets hurt. If nobody gets hurt, there's no joke. So that's why it's called a punchline. You show me a joke, I'll tell you who gets hurt. You can tell me a joke where nobody gets hurt. I defy you.
You're making me laugh. That's really funny.
Well, the wife gets hurt. The Polish guy gets hurt. The fat girl gets hurt. The old man gets hurt. not harmful, but there's a butt of the joke. There just has to be. But there's no end.
Except for the fact that most people now are doing material that is about themselves. They start with, I am. I'm a single mom, or I'm a this, or I'm a that, or I used to be a flight attendant, or I used to do this, but now I do
this. Okay, so who's the butt of the joke?
No, I hear you.
If it's about you, then you're the butt of the joke. It's not like the joke is going without a punch.
Right.
The punch is turned back on you, you know.
Fair enough. But I want to ask you something, Jackie. Why don't you do that material? Why don't you talk about your ex-wife and stuff?
Because I was a musician. and I quit music in 1978. And to steal from Jackie Mason and Rodney Dangerfield, when I quit music, I was the only one who knew I quit. Okay. And but in all those years, in 30 years, I had collected since I was a kid. There's a documentary out on me that I would love you to see. I've remembered every joke that I ever heard. I heard a dirty joke from my cousin in third grade, and it clicked. I graduated from Michigan State University as a mechanical engineer in 1971. And I used my diploma to roll pot. I mean, that's all I did was listen to jokes, tell jokes. All musicians love jokes. I told jokes my whole life. And when I got out of music, I said, what am I going to do? And I already had a gazillion jokes. It's not like I said, I want to be a comedian. Now I got to go get an act. I was like, what am I going to do? Make some money. All I have is these jokes. I said, you know, I'll try telling them on stage. And I never looked back because I tell them well and everybody loves them. People say, well, you don't write those jokes. I say, when somebody gets up and does Hamlet, they didn't write fucking Hamlet. It's just they do it really well. If they do it really crappy, they say he did it crappy. If he did it great, you know, he's Laurence Olivier. You know,
Jackie, it's a whole long thing. You are so good at it, and you do it so well. You have a skill that is very specific and very hard to achieve. I mean, it's almost on the edge of like an autism. I mean, the catalog.
Yeah, you know, it really is. And people say, well, you do jokes. I tell people, you know what? You gather some jokes, and you go up on stage, and you tell jokes, and see how long you last. Because if you tell a joke, nobody's laughing. You tell another joke, and it gets old so fast. People freak out, and then they go up and try that, and they're like, you know what? Maybe he knows what he's doing. You know, it always sounds pompous to say that, but it's not something it's not a comedic skill. I mean, I stood at every barroom, every party, every pot party, taking acid, drinking Jack Daniels in college, in high school, all through the 70s, getting drunk. I was the last one standing, listened to every joke that every person had to tell. And once in a blue moon, I'd hear a new one. I had a band in the 70s. In the mid-70s, people would come up to me at the bar and say, you tell jokes? I got a joke for you. And I'd say, I'll tell you what, I'm going to count down from 10. And when I get to zero, if I haven't told you the punchline, I'll buy you a drink. I never bought anybody a drink. I knew every joke I got so I could hear the parallels. I could put them together. It's. I'm not bragging. This is just.
No,
that's
unique.
All I do. I don't know if if my car doesn't start, I got to call somebody. I don't know nothing. You know what I mean? But I love it. I've always loved it. When we started, the guys in the city were like, "Oh, that guy in Long Island tells old jokes. Yeah, he sucks." And then they do a gig with me, and they watch me destroy a crowd for 45 minutes, and then they hang out with me. And I was funnier than them. And like, you know what? Maybe this guy is all right. You know, you got to pass muster with them, you know.
Well, listen, you know, it's a style of comedy. You know, I think about my buddy Jay London, who does the one-liners kind of like Stephen Wright. I mean, that is a skill that I can't even believe. And then you see people who are doing, you know, their mother. You hear Maria Bamford and all of her characters. And I think I could never do that.
You know, you find your niche and you drive it home, you know. You know, if I had started doing this and it didn't work, I would have stopped. I'm not a masochist, although some nights it might have felt like it. But on a good night, you know, like you just stay with it. You know what I mean? And that's all I had. I didn't have a plan B. It's like, do this, you know. I mean, I stumbled into the Howard Stern show. That was totally random, you know, like... You know, I took a couple of years off to make enough money to buy a house. You know what I mean? It's like, It's an odd life. Enough about me. You know.
Oh, no, no, this is all about you, dude. You're on my show.
Oh.
No, when you say you stumbled into Stern, you had like three comedy albums out and somebody showed it or Howard heard some of it.
Well, what happened was when we started comedy on Long Island, which is going to lead into my story later, I put out an album and then I put out another album and I put out another album. I recorded them all myself, transferred them, you know, I came up with the jokes. I honed the jokes. I told the jokes, recorded the jokes, edited the jokes, made an LP, like an actual LP, then made a second LP, made a third LP, and I kept sending them everywhere without any idea why. Just sending them everywhere. And one of the people, I was in Washington, D.C., and the guy that owned Garvin's Comedy Laughing said, hey, there's this madman that just got fired from DC 101. He's going to NBC in New York. You should look him up. I bet she'd love you. And my future ex-wife, she really was, my future ex-wife and me were sending albums to everybody. And we put the three albums and the matching cassettes and a promo and just mailed them like we mailed 300 or 400 other sets of them to WNBC AM. Who knew if anybody'd ever see it, whether it'd get to anybody. I didn't know who Howard Stern was. I didn't know for anything. And like a couple of months later, he called up. He said, hey, it took us time to get settled here, blah, blah, blah. But we listened to your album and you know every joke. You want to come in and hang out today. So I went into WNBC and sat with Howard and Robin and Fred. And we laughed for 4 hours. And at the end of the day, he said, you know what? You're a pisser. He said, why don't you come back next week? And that was that.
Wow.
I came back once a week for 3 years. And then we went to mornings. And then we went to Pluto.
You really did. That's a wonderful beginning. I am a Howard Stern fan. I have been really not my whole life, but well, you know, since the mid 80s. And I feel like in a way I grew up with you because your voice has been in especially my mornings for a long, long time.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Definitely. Well, you fit in perfectly, you know, you assimilated perfectly. But speaking of it, you know, you wrote a book a couple of years ago called Joke Man, Bow to Stern. So the title Bow to Stern, it sounds very aggressive.
Well, what it is Bow to Stern is beginning to end. You know, it's the story of my life. It's just like it's a goofy title. You know, okay, it's like it's a fun double entendre, you know.
But it sounds aggressive. And then you open the book and it's a lot about your past, your family.
Yeah, no. It's there's no kind of attack. You know, I got so much crap from people. Oh, you didn't rat on Howard. You didn't do this. You didn't. That's not me. I'm a nice guy. I'm a friendly guy. It was a spectacular time on that show. You know,
of course, you
were plenty of problems, plenty of crap. But
well,
I'm
like
sure
any job
crap
would have
any job, right? So,
yeah, but what I'm saying is that title. I happen to work at a bookstore, and I have for like 20 years. The title of a book is really muy importante, and when you say Bow to Stern, it just sounds like.
You're one of very few. You're one of very few. Most people thought it was one of the great titles of all time. So, I mean, everybody's proud of their opinion, but yeah, nobody really saw it that way. Not, you know.
Interesting. Cause I just felt like it was like, you know, like he's the king or whatever. And you do rave.
Anybody that knows me at all and anybody that ever listened to the show knows that if I thought he was the king, I'd still be there.
Yeah. That's so funny. I know. And it's always this, everybody always says, you know, well, it's like, if you look you up in Wikipedia or, I mean, I actually haven't done that, but if you did, I wouldn't be surprised if it says, you know, Jackie Martling left the show in 2001, one of Hollywood's biggest mistakes or, you know,
well, you know,
and sometimes people refer to it as that, as you know,
I'm sure it is. And I'm sure it was. But there's so many mitigating factors to anything that happens. And that's why I put out the documentary. And that's why I wrote the book. You know, I gave up on Wikipedia because anybody can write anything. Some person was going in there religiously changing my age to 1944 from 1948 just to drive me crazy. I finally said, you know, fuck Wikipedia, you know,
that's
so
bizarre.
They could write. Oh, and then the last time I looked at it, somebody said, And Jackie recently revealed that he's had suffered for his entire life with autism. And what, you can't do anything. Somebody just wrote that. You know what I mean? So people go, oh, you know, I thought so. You know,
dude, that sucks, man. Honestly.
You know, what are you going to do? You know, now everybody's going to go in and say, look, Jackie has one leg, you know.
No, but it's, you must feel in a way like a little bit like, right on, man. I still piss people off, or I'm still relevant enough that people talk about me.
I just, the secret to it is to not care. Of course you care, but to not let it rule you. You know, I mean, I wake up and I look at it Long Island Sound, and I go out swimming five times a day, and I live in a gorgeous little neighborhood with a pretty girl, and I have a terrific family. I'm like, you know, I'm not bulletproof, because everything hurts, but everything always hurt, you know, or else you wouldn't be a musician, or else you wouldn't be a comedian, you know, getting drunk and chasing girls and trying to escape whatever that little demon is inside you that can't get full. But you learn to say, you know what, you know, Rodney used to say, yeah, every day I wake up with a heaviness, you know, I have a real heaviness. You know, sometimes I talk to it, I say, good morning, heaviness. You know, it's like you just fucking deal with it. That's all, you know.
I agree. You're specifically, you look great, like I said before. You seem very healthy. You've totally, you know, moved on. You have 6 comedy albums in your quiver, and you've produced a lot of things, and you have written a lot, and you continue to go out and do your thing. So I'm impressed with you. Trust me.
But meanwhile, I'll get done with this interview, and I'll go outside, and I'll bang my head against a tree. You know, we're all full of shit, you know.
And so with that in mind, that demon you're talking about, that has to have come right from childhood. Yes? Is it true?
I had a very weird, my mother and father lived downstairs in the house where my father had grown up. And my father and mother lived downstairs. And a year later, my father's brother married my mother's sister, and they lived upstairs. So we're downstairs, Aunt Janet and Uncle Len are upstairs, 2 brothers, 2 sisters, and I was the first kid. So for the first 2 years of my life, I had 4 doting parents. I'm sure every poop, every fart, every step, you know, the goo, 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 ka, 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 blah, 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 blah. And then after 2 years, my mother had another kid, my aunt had a kid, my father started drinking more, and I went from 4 parents to none. And so I spent the next 70 years going, where the fuck did everybody go? You know, I mean, does that make any sense? I don't know. But maybe, you know, who knows? Who knows what, you know, this is something that people have been chasing and chasing and chasing, trying to figure out, you know, people from good families, bad families, poor people, rich people. Why do they become, you know, musicians or comedians? It's so elusive. You know, I went to a psychiatrist for 6 months or a year, a therapist, whatever you'd call it, with the intention of finding out why making people laugh makes me feel good. We never got near the topic. After a year, I was like, you know, we forgot what I came here for. You know, it's just like, it's, you know what, if you start trying to think about your own death, you can't. You start thinking about your own death, you change the subject. Try it.
Wait a minute, you don't go to therapy to talk about your death.
No. I'm talking about in real life. Like,
I know, but that
say,
therapist, that wasn't a good therapist. You came in.
No,
something
fuck
to
no.
Talk
I'm sure, you know, I'm probably handpicked. Probably if she had started going down the route I wanted her to, I'd say next, you know.
But wait a second. It's not elusive at all. Dude, you just said it. You just told me exactly why you need this reoccurring approval. You just said
it. I think. I don't know that.
No, I know it. No,
okay,
I know.
Well, then, right now you're my therapist, Christina. We did it.
Would you
made the connection. I can relax.
If you'd like, I can sign something for you, you know, forward it to your loved ones, and I'll tell them Jackie's figured it out.
You know, it was like the Tin Man. You know, I just need a proclamation, you know. Jackie's fine.
No, listen, it's so interesting, Jackie. And now you and I, and I'm going to tell you now why, but I've made such a connection with you because check this out. I'm the youngest of 6. Okay.
So
growing up, there's 8 of us in about 800 square feet. I didn't have a bedroom until I was like 12.
And where are we? What town?
In Pittsburgh, outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So rural. Yeah, you know where I am. It's very rural, just a lot of a lot of lawns and big yards, no sidewalks, no street
I know
lights.
Pittsburgh. I spent 3 weeks in Pittsburgh one night.
Now, was that Mark Twain? No, is that Twain?
That Mark Twain said it, but everything Mark Twain said, he had heard his whole life from other places. You read about any of these people, trust me. You know, the famous thing about Mark Twain, people say, hell, Sam Clemens, he didn't know any more stories than any rest of us. He just wrote them down. That's a famous quote, you know, but he wrote them down. So he's Mark Twain.
That's interesting.
Why didn't you, if you think he shouldn't be Mark Twain, why the fuck didn't you write them down? Because he did it.
Real quick, I want to go back to what we were just talking about. But real quick, do you believe that Shakespeare wrote all his stuff?
I knew if he even met the guy. You know, it's like Edison. Edison invented the light bulb. And, you know, and the 45 guys that worked on it with him will attest to that. You know, it's like when you write something, you know, there's a great new show. What is it?
Story Smash, the storytelling game show?
Yes, that must be it. But Tina Fey is a therapist and she's got one of these crazy TV shows and she's got an assistant. And every time the assistant says something brilliant, Tina Fey turns to her and says, I just wrote that and don't forget it. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll have that. You know, I'll have that.
Wow.
So, you know, I don't, whether Shakespeare collected stories, he wrote them, you know, I'm probably the only person on the planet that never read Shakespeare. My ex-wife used to climb up my ass and say, you would love it. He's so funny. It's so great. I'm like, I got joke books to read. Leave me the fuck alone. You know,
well, guess what, Jackie? That's the second thing we have in common. I've also never read Shakespeare because I just can't. I can't. It hurts my head and I want to cry. So that's not happening.
The furthest I ever got was Shakespeare, kick in the rear. Shake your hands. Happy New Year. That's as much as I know about Shakespeare.
Listen, I'm the youngest of six, right?
So okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. There's all this chaos in the house. I mean, not chaos, in a good way, right? Because it's family. It's Catholic. It's like this whole family bond thing. And then all of a sudden, my oldest sister goes off to college. Then the next sister. Then the next sister. Then the next sister.
Wait a minute. Now, how close? You were six.
My mother.
Bing, 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 bing. Like,
with
like
my mom.
7 years or within 20 years?
Within 10 years, my mom was 20 with her first child and 30 with me. Can you believe that?
It's
insane. And so my point is everybody leaves and then it's me and my mom and dad. And then guess who's been having an affair with their tennis partner? My dad. And then he leaves. So now it's just me and my mom.
So let's make mom happy.
Well, I no, not even possible. I mean, it just was just a different time. And so then I had no parental guidance. So I just went like, you know, I dated, meaning I slept around. I had a lot of boyfriends. You know what I mean? There was no.
And the little bit you saw your father, you couldn't do anything wrong because you're the apple of his eye. So he just let you do it, whatever you wanted, I'm sure.
Well, you're wrong there, because what happened is he left and I didn't see him for 9 years.
Oh, so I was off by a little.
Funny is funny. Truth is funny.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, but I have that and I know I do. And even though I can realize why I want that much approval, it doesn't matter. It just ends up who I am. So fair enough.
Right. You can't go back and change it. You know, my buddy Burp says everything is the way it is because it has to be. Because if it wasn't this way, it'd be this way. And that's how it'd have to be.
I like
that. So, you know, we are what we are and it is what it is. And fuck William Shakespeare.
Yeah. And Mark Twain.
And Mark Twain.
So you never had kids?
No. You know what? I guess it's been long. My wife and I, it was probably... what added to, you know, the Stern Show was no friend to any relationship really, but we did IVF 6 times and thank God we had the money, but I can't even tell you, if I don't know if you have friends that ever did IVF, the damage that, you know, when you get that phone call, we're sorry, times 6 times after a month of 2 shots a day and thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars. And then we're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry. And of all things today on the news, there's 2 couples in California where they got the wrong babies. They put the wrong, like they put your eggs in her and her eggs in you. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to tell Nancy. Like, did you hear about this? How fucked up can anything be? But no, we had that, and we never had kids, and she didn't want to adopt, and so I went with that, and you know, it's the one hole in my life, but I would have never got anywhere, you know, because I would have never had the balls to argue with the Stern Show about money, because I wouldn't have dared risk my job had I had mouths to fill. But besides me and Nancy, I knew me and my ex-wife, you could have given us a shake or a salt and put us in the desert. We would have been fine. You know, one of those things. But it's hard. But my sister has my goddaughter, Jessie, and she, you know, she has 2-year-old twins. And it's like, it's just the source of all my joy, you know. So
that is, you know,
but it's a hole, you know, it's a monster hole. But I mean, I'm over it more now. But for years and years, if I heard somebody say daddy or grandpa, you know, I'd be like, I mean, nothing against them. Just like, you know, I'm just, believe it or not, I'm a sensitive guy. It's crazy.
Hey, you brought up that contract again. You just brought it up. Let me just ask you one more question. Did you want to accept the contract and your lawyer said don't? Or did you say, no, I don't want to either?
I was following his advice. And so many people don't even know. At one point I said, listen, Larry, I can't take it anymore. Let's take the deal. And he said, no, it hadn't been long enough. They're going to cave. So, you know, had he said, okay, I might be still there, but I also might be dead. I mean, it was rough, you know, but I followed his advice, and he couldn't believe it. For the most part, a real lot of people couldn't believe that they let me go. But you know what? You can't negotiate unless you plan on dealing with that. You know, I knew there was every chance, and, you know, I was so shocked. I don't know if you ever did morning radio, but I did morning radio for 15 years. And it's like, it's hard to describe, you know, and having a life on top of it, you know, and stand up comedy and doing 6 LPs and, you know, and videos and TV shows and live gigs. Like, whoa, you know, I go back and think about one day in my life. And I freak out. I mean, I would do more in one day back then than I do in 2 weeks now. I literally, you know, like crazy, you know, get up at 4:30 in the morning, go do your show on a Friday, get done with the show, go to the airport. There were no direct flights to Las Vegas. So you fly to Phoenix, then fly from Phoenix to Las Vegas, and then check into the Riviera. And my show is at 10 o'clock. But it's 1 o'clock. So I've been up since 4:30 and my show is at 1 in the morning and I do an hour and a half show. And then I got to take everybody back to my suite and party for 3 hours and smoke pot and get drunk. I'm like, and then do the same thing the next night and then get on the flight and come home and wake up at 4:30 and start again on Monday. I'd be, what the fuck? But there was swinging money in front of me that was more money than I usually made in a year. So what are you going to do? You know, people say, oh, you had it so rough. No, it wasn't rough. It was a lot of money. It was a lot of fun, a lot of women, a lot of everything. But it was tough, you know.
I think you're so right. You might not be alive. I mean, honestly, that is a lifestyle that's hard to maintain. And yeah, it can age you as well.
And the more money we made and the more money I made, the better the gigs got, the better they wanted to treat you. And, you know, it was crazy.
I am friends with Lana Turner, who was married to Ralphie May. And a lot of that kind of over excessiveness and gluttony and all of it, you know, killed Ralphie for sure. I mean,
right. And, you know, it's not comedians and musicians are not built to say no thanks. You know what I mean? Right. Thank you, sir. May I have another? You know, and I knew I would never quit drinking. When I got off the show, I quit drinking. I haven't had a drink in over 20 years.
Congratulations.
You know, I always say that's so funny when people say congratulations, because it's very odd to take congratulations for something that you didn't do. But it is true, you know, and you know, you get to the point, oh, I could have a drink, I'd be fine. And I'm like, no, you asshole. No. And I, you know.
Well,
and I just
great.
Deal with it. I smoke pot. You know, I grow pot, smoke pot, have fun, try to laugh a little bit. You know, that's all.
You're lucky to be able to grow pot. Is it outside or do you have a thing in the closet?
It's outside. Nobody knows about it.
I think it's legal. Isn't it legal in New York?
Not real. You know, I've been growing for 20 years, and everybody in town, gives a shit? Lock me up,
Yeah.
I used to be sitting out there, and Billy Joel lives down the street, I tell people Billy Joel lives 2 miles and 12 tax brackets away from me. And there's always, and Rupert Murdoch lives on Center Island, all these people, and there's always helicopters going back and forth. And I'm always like, oh, they're looking at my pot plants. I'm like, Jackie, calm down. They don't give a fuck about your pot plants.
That's the one thing that you can always reassure yourself, like as a comedian or a musician, or when you're trying to like impress people or you're trying to get that approval, you can always be sure nobody gives a fuck.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. You're the only one who cares about your life and yourself.
It'd be a really funny show to have somebody, a comedian or a musician, stand there talking to somebody and telling them about a gig or their life and have a thought bubble over the other person, what they're actually thinking about. Like, should I pick up my dry cleaning or did I get laid last night? Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Isn't that funny? And the other one is my friend will say, because I do stand up as well, he'll say, listen, you're not as good as you think you are, and you're not as bad as you think you are.
Right, right. You're right in the sweet spot. It's a moving target,
Well, nonetheless, I hate that guy Larry for telling you not to take the deal. And I'm only saying that because people do miss you. You were a great integral part of the show. It is what we knew. It is what we know. And, then you were gone. So that's why it's the money, but it's also just the fact that like, oh shit.
I tell people I was very sorry, but not because of the fame and not because of the money and the thing is, it is so abnormal to sit in a room with 3 or 4 or 5 really funny, talented, smart, quick other people. And to do that 4 or 5 hours a day for all those years, you don't realize that is so abnormal. And that's what you miss is that. And it wasn't even so much camaraderie because half the time we're up each other's ass, but that funny, funny, funny thing. It was lightning in a bottle that nobody's been able to really recapture. And, That's what you miss, it was great having a lot of money. It was great getting famous, blah, 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 blah. But that was, I'd be shot to pieces, but I go in there and have a cup of coffee. And for the next 5 hours, boom, the one who got the raw end of it is, I drive an hour home and I walk in the door and Nancy'd say hello. And I, you crash when you're done,
Yeah. Yeah, but it was fun. To be so on point. You have to be so focused and so in the moment, and you can't drop your guard and it's all mental. So it's kind of fucks with you. You got to be ready, I'm sure, to jump in there at whatever time.
Yeah, like Yogi Berra said, it was 100% half mental.
Well, I'm excited.
I'll tell you a story that I don't even think I put this in my book. And I didn't even know if I told it. When I first got my computer, after I'd had it a while, a friend of mine said, have you ever tried sound editing? And I didn't. I mean, I did my albums on, transferred the tapes to reel to reel and cut them up with a razor blade and tape, splicing tape. And I made my albums.
Unbelievable.
The old fashioned way. And they said, hey, have you ever tried sound editing? I said, no, I'm like the Amish. No, I got a horse. I don't need that car. Right. So I got a new computer, and in the computer, in the bundle of stuff that came with the computer, was a program called SoundForge, which was audio editing on the computer. And I looked at it, and it's so ridiculously simple compared to, you take a piece of something and you put it over here, and if you don't like it, you hit click and it goes back, but you can change your mind 17 times. You can go back. I'm like, this is crazy. And the manual for the SoundForge program was included in the bundle. And I printed out the entire manual to the audio editing program and brought it with me to work. Now, I don't know if when you were in high school, did you ever do your homework in class? Like while the teacher's talking, you're doing your homework so you'd be free to go out and fuck around that night. I had this manual to SoundForge sitting there while we were on the air. So we're on the air doing the show, and I'm reading this manual a little bit at a time until I had absorbed enough that I could go home and try and apply it that night. And I learned the entire self-forge audio program. And I always say to myself, I should find out what that month or two was, because I wonder how much funnier Howard would have been if I had been paying attention to my fucking job.
Do you use any sound editing stuff now, like GarageBand or anything?
Well, I've always edited everything on the computer since then. I finally circled back and did a music album, but that was recorded, you know.
I know, but what do you use to edit audio? Or not necessarily.
I still use SoundForge. SoundForge.
Oh, my God. No shit.
And I love it. And there's a million billion bells and whistles.
Sure.
But I don't use them. The one time I used them was I did a kid's gizmo and with kids jokes in it. And it was like, this sucks. This is not working. God, kids, and all of a sudden I said, wait a minute. And I sped up the jokes just a hair, so I sounded a little bit like a munchkin. And that unlocked the whole thing. And we sold tens of thousands of these things because all of a sudden it wasn't me.
It was me. Hey, why'd you check it across the road?
That's the one time I used an actual gizmo on the thing,
Yeah, part of the program.
You're taking up a third of a step. I don't know, whatever it is. Yeah,
no, I hear what you're saying. I use GarageBand and I probably only use 15% of it. And I've been doing this for 11 years,
Right. Now you're talking about for your audio program or are you talking music?
No, I'm talking about just audio, just my podcast here. Yeah, I use GarageBand. But then I also use Auphonics to kind of bring down the master and tighten that up. And anyway, but listen, I want to ask you one more thing, and then we're going to your story, Las Vegas with Rodney Dangerfield. I can't wait. But let me ask you something. I am friends with a guy named Rich Voss. Do you remember Rich Voss?
Very well. He was just starting when I was hosting the Rascals Comedy Hour in like 1990, I think it was. Way back.
I texted him this morning because I knew that. And let me tell you what he wrote to me. He said, this is from Rich. It was Crosswinds with Rich and Phil, and the owner's name was Chris, and he didn't pay us for opening the comedy show, but he told us to sit in the walk-in beer refrigerator and drink as much as we wanted. Jackie got wind of this and would join us. He would sit in there with us freezing and drinking.
You know what? I'm absolutely sure he's telling the truth, and I don't remember. Now, this is Crosswinds was the name of the place?
Yeah, I guess so. The bar was the Purple Onion.
On Long Island?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, what's Rich? Rich Voss wasn't from Long Island, was he?
I don't know, man.
No, there was a place called the Purple Onion where we worked, but that was so early on. My God, that was like 1978. That's right where my story starts.
Wow.
That very era. You can tell him, or ask him if the owner was Orest, O-R-E-S-T, Orest.
No, he said it was Crest. Oh, maybe that was it then. He wrote C-R-E-S-T, but maybe he meant O-R-E-S-T.
It was O-R-E-S-T, Orest.
Funny.
You know what? I might have had it wrong all these years. I don't know. I'll tell you, that place, we made $5 a piece. And on the way home, this was in the very, very beginning when it was me and Bob Nelson and Richie Minabini and Jim Myers and Dave Hawthorne and Bob Woods. We called ourselves the Magnificent Seven. There wasn't a funny guy in the whole group. No blacks, no Jews, just seven white guys from Long Island who were trying to do whatever. And we'd get $5 a piece. And any different combination of guys would show up. And on the way home, we would stop at a strip club. And the deal was, if you were the host, if you were the MC of the show, you got $25. But the deal was, when we stopped at the strip club, we would have one round of drinks, but the MC had to pay for the round, which cost more than the $25. So if you MC'd the night, it actually cost you money. And one night we stopped there. We stopped there. It was Bob Nelson's 21st birthday, and he was such an innocent guy. And just such a sweet guy. And he just did not belong with us low-life, drunken bastards. And he's in bad shape now with cancer, but we raised a lot of money for him. I think he's turning around. But it's his 21st birthday, and the stripper's there. And I said to her, listen, you know, will you go be nice to Bob Nelson? It's his birthday. And he was so early on, he's wearing a tie. And the stripper came over and undid his tie and put it around his neck and rubbed her nose against him, you know. And he's like so innocent. He's totally freaked out. And then she takes the tie and puts it between her legs and, you know, kind of flosses with the tie, being cute. We're laughing our ass off. And then she hands him back the tie. And Nelson's is a true story. He says, will you autograph it? And she took the tie and held her up to her nose. And she says, I already did.
Wow.
How
that's
great.
Funny.
You cannot make up a better story than that.
No, that's a funny story.
And if you know how innocent Nelson is, it quadruples the story. I mean, he couldn't have been more embarrassed, you know.
Sure, sure. That's awesome. Well, I'm really happy you're here. And let's get over to your story in a second here. But I wanted to remind everybody that we are playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show, Saturday, November 27th at the Hollywood Improv. Come on down. Blank Apache is going to be there. And I've got three fabulous comedians spinning the wheel. Jackie, you would love my game show. Do you ever come
I'm sure I would. I'm sure I would.
Do you ever come to L.A.?
I haven't been there in so long. They closed down my favorite place, the Standard Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. That was during the pandemic. I think we lost it then.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And but I have good, of course, I got good friends that live out there. There was a guy that used to hire me for a lot of money for his party every year. That's been a couple of years, you know. But I got to get out there. I got a lot, you know, over the years, he wound up having so many friends and so many New Yorkers wound up moving out there, you know. So
yeah, well, when
if I'm ever out there, I will crash your party for
that's
sure.
That's awesome. I appreciate it. You guys can head over to storysmashshow.com to check out more details and also follow Story Smash on Instagram. Would you do that at Story Smash? That's where you're going to see all the really fun show photos, etc. All right, you guys, he's here right now, Jackie, the joke man, Martling. Like I said, he is a writer and a comedian and a producer and a musician and an author. And you do have 6 comedy albums. You got a couple of books. You've just done so many things. I didn't even know about the kids thing, the kids joke book. That sounds like fun.
I was up to like 15 products with this company called Excalibur Electronics. We had a kids you know, you push the nose, it told a joke. Then there was another one. And then we had an insult mirror. Remember, I don't know how old you are, but in the old days, they had a mirror where when you held it up, it would laugh at your face. But this is the same thing, only it would insult you. All these clean insults. It was so much fun. And then we came up with a really dirty joke box where you push the button and it tells a filthy joke. And we had all, and then the guy, like everybody with a great business, he overexpanded and went into the toilet. And I was making, I was off the show, but I'm making a couple hundred grand a year with these ridiculous products and going to the trade shows. And it was so much fun. And it just went away. Like,
that sucks. So he was trying to make it even better. Like he didn't understand the niche of it.
You know, I'm not going to bore you with the story, but it was a real perfect storm. What happened?
Yeah.
A real perfect. He went against his. You know, he had a plan for the way he ran his business, and he went against his plan that was foolproof.
Ugh.
And he fooled himself.
What an idiot. Well, see, these are the things we look back in our life. We see these things, you know, it's like projects, you know, as an independent contractor, you know, as one of these. You know, artists, you're an artist. As an artist, you know, you see these things come and you see these things go. And it's a process and it's a body of work at the end of the day. It's
well, you know, really one thing. I lost that whole thing, but at least in this instance, it wasn't my own doing.
Yeah, so
at least I didn't fuck it up myself.
Yeah, no kidding, man. No kidding. You guys can find Jackie over there on Instagram at Jackie Martling and also follow him on Twitter at Jackie Martling. And
a new joke every day at 4:20 p.m. International Marijuana Time.
That is so fun. And then you can also find him over at jokeland.com. So wherever you are, you guys, put your hands together for Jackie the Joke Man Martling.
Oh, I want to say one more thing. Believe it or not, if you say Alexa, play Jackie Martling, make sure there's no little kids in the room.
No, you can. I like it. You can do Alexa play Storyworthy or play the latest episode of Storyworthy or whatever. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's ridiculous, right? I love it. I love it.
Except the Alexa thing, I don't have one personally because I just feel like, you know, if it has that kind of power, then everything I'm saying.
I got rid of it because if you sneeze, the next day FedEx is at your door. With a doorknob or a new sink. It's like, no, I didn't know it. You know,
it's really odd, but I guess, you know, I have a Mac computer and Siri's always on. So I guess it's really the same thing. Like I could I could say, hey Siri right now. And I think it would fuck up our recording.
do you know what happened right in your neighborhood in like San Diego? One day a UPS guy showed up with a $400 dollhouse. And the guy, the woman's like, where'd this come from? You ordered it. And it turned out her kid had been playing with Alexa and said, oh, you know, I'm probably not even playing with Alexa. Probably just said, oh, I really wish I had a nice dollhouse. And it sent the dollhouse. So this becomes a story. And the idiot newscaster, you can Google this. The idiot newscaster says, and here's an interesting story. A young girl right here in San Diego must have said the right combination of stuff that she wanted a dollhouse. Like she must have said, Alexa, I want a dollhouse and a dollhouse. Every family who had an Alexa in that room when he said, Alexa, I want a dollhouse, like 250 people got fucking dollhouses. It's the greatest story.
That's a true story. I gotta look that up. That is fucking funny.
It was pretty soon after the thing first came out, you know.
I couldn't believe that. That's really funny. But nonetheless, it's kind of cool to think like, you know, yeah, your work is always kind of like right in reach of people's voice.
It's fun. You know, it's silly fun.
All right. Let's hear this story. I'm dying. I love it.
Okay. So it's 1978 and I was playing the guitar in the band. Then I was playing guitar and telling jokes in the band. Then I'm playing guitar and telling jokes on my own. And then I got to where I was, instead of playing guitar and telling jokes, I decide I'm going to tell jokes and play the guitar. And I'm struggling to try and be a comedian with the other guys, the other local guys. It's a long story how we all wound up together. It's very fun. It's in my book, you know. And but when you're scratching and clawing like that, like any kind of good news, you want any kind of good news. And my grandmother passed away and I'm living in my grandmother's house with my girlfriend and my good friend, Richie Minervini, the first comic I met, who's still a dear friend, used to come and stay with us sometimes. So we wouldn't have to drive all the way home to Huntington. And he walked in one night and he said, oh, what a night I had, man. I went to Dangerfields and I got on and Rodney saw me and he thought I was really great. He said, kid, you're really good. Yeah, I'm going to try and use you on TV. You know, I'm going to do a lot of stuff for you. And he really loved me. And I'm immediately so jealous, I could bite my hand. I couldn't believe it. So I said, all right, I got an inside track. So I sat down with a carbon copy sticking in the typewriter and every joke I could think of that I knew that I told, anything that remotely might work, I typed into Rodney Dangerfield speak. You know what I mean? You know? And typed 6 pages. And I had recently had a friend call me up from Peru with a very, very, very funny joke that was included in these jokes that I typed out. And so a couple of days later, Richie walks in. I've got the jokes. I put the carbon copy to the side. I fold up the 6 pages. I put them in an envelope and wrote Rodney Dangerfield. And Richie comes in and said, Richie, you got to do me a favor. You got to give these to your friend, Rodney Dangerfield. And he gets all sheepish. He says, oh, man. He's like, I didn't meet Rodney. He wasn't even there. I didn't even get on stage that night. I'm like, you motherfucker. He goes, you know, but I really was there. And I swear to you, Christina, I swear on my mother, he took a matchbook out of his pocket. And there's Rodney Dangerfield, who, like this, you know, 1118 First Avenue. He says, this is proof I was there. And what am I going to do? I took the envelope with Rodney's name on it, wrote the address on it, and mailed it. There's nothing to lose. Now, my grandmother's dead. Everybody she knew was dead. Nobody knows her phone number. And I'm sitting there with my girlfriend 2 days later, and the phone rings. And I answer, hello, hello. I said, who is this? He says, it's Rodney. I said, Rodney who? Ha, I knew you were fucking funny. I could tell by these jokes, you know, I know you're funny. And Lois is like, who is it? I said, it's fucking Rodney Dangerfield. She said, no, who is it? I said, it's Rodney. Said, yeah, there's some funny shit here. You know, I really love this. Why don't you come to Westbury Music Fair and come backstage and we'll talk. I'll buy a couple of these jokes. Yak, yak, yak. And long story short, we show up at Westbury and we walk into his dressing room. And I've got a ponytail down the middle of my back and torn blue jeans. My girlfriend's 10 years younger. I'm like 28, 29, and she's like 19, and she's beautiful. And he's like, oh, she's beautiful. Look at you. You know, the fucking blue jeans and the hair. What's with? Oh, she's pretty. You want a piece of fruit? Hey, how you doing? Yeah. You know, some jokes here. Funny, funny fucking jokes. This two-bagger joke. I love this. Hey, she's pretty. You know. So he does his show, and the two-bagger joke. I don't know if you know the joke. It's an old, old thing from forever ago, but I'm the one who got it to him. And he always said it was his favorite joke, and he could never be mad at me because, and it was a girl so ugly, she's known as a two-bagger. As a girl is so ugly, you not only got to put a bag over her head, you got to put a bag over your own head in case her bag rips. And it brought the house down, and I'm like in heaven. So now I'm sending him jokes. And that's a whole long story and the Howard Stern battle, and it's in my book. That's not the point of the story. But I'm sending him jokes and sending him jokes, and I'm always bugging him. Come on, boss, take me with you. Take me on the road. Take me to Las Vegas. Take me somewhere. We'll have fun. We'll write some jokes. We'll break balls, blah, 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 blah. And after badgering him for like a couple of years, I mean, along the way, he didn't really buy anything more. He bought a couple jokes, but not much. And then he was using them without saying anything. But that was not due to anything subversive. He was a cokehead and a pothead and a drunk. He's not keeping track. He didn't give a fuck. So finally, he calls me up one day. And he says, hey, listen, I'm going to Vegas. You want to go to Vegas? I'm like, do I want to go to Las Vegas? Yes, on me. You know what? I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to Lauderdale first with my kids. You know what I mean? Yeah, come to Lauderdale. Come to Lauderdale. We'll go to Vegas. We'll have a nice 2 weeks. I'm like, wow. So I flew with his kids to Fort Lauderdale and rented a car and then went back and picked them up at the airport. The whole time, it's like, pinch me. You know, it's like, you got to be kidding. I mean, I'm picking him up on York Avenue and his kids are there and I'm loading the stuff into the car and I can't believe it. You know, and he's like, yeah, you make sure, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and lots of tips. I'm like, I said, you do realize every time you open your mouth, I'm going to laugh. Yeah, it's all right. Don't fucking worry. Don't worry. You know, so we go to Lauderdale and there's so many details, but that's for another day. We leave Lauderdale. We go to Las Vegas. He's headlining at the Aladdin Hotel in Las Vegas. Paul Williams is on the bill. But Rodney's opening the show, even though he's a headliner. Yeah, the comedian goes, then the music. The comedian doesn't follow the music. It's showbiz, you know. The comedian, then the music. So Paul Williams is absolutely thrilled that Rodney sees that's the way to do it. And he winds up having us to his house. And we spent an afternoon with a pile of cocaine like I'd never seen in my life. And I think Paul got cleaned like 2 days after that. He's been clean for like 40 years. So we have the time of our life. And we're at the Aladdin. Now, this is Easter time of 1980. And I don't know how old you are, but there was a gas strike. There had been a gas strike in the early 70s. And this is 1980 probably April. And it was a crazy gas strike. I mean, with, you know, lines around the block and the whole crowd. I mean, people weren't even going to the next town, let alone driving to Las Vegas. So Las Vegas is a ghost town. And his shows are like, you know, like one third full or something. But there's nobody in town. You know, I had such a rude awakening because we get out and we get in the limo and we pull up to Aladdin and I'm with this superstar. He wasn't as well known as he was going to get because that was just when they started the Miller beer commercials. Mm-hmm. And he was in all the commercials with all the different sports stars. And as opposed to doing Dean Martin or Johnny Carson once every couple of months or once every couple of weeks, he was on TV every 5 seconds with Bubba Smith or Joe Namath or somebody. And it was like, and he was in every commercial and they rotated. So everybody knows, like, look at this. Everybody fucking knows me. Yeah, I was, hey, Rodney, I never had this. Like, look at this. I'm a superstar. So he's all excited and it's unbelievable. So we pull up to the Aladdin and he gets out of the car and we walk in the hotel and this was a slap in my face. The first thing he did was walk up to the ticket booth and said to the girl, how's sales? How are we doing? I'm like, holy shit, it never ends. It never ends. How am I doing? Do we sell any tickets? You know, you think at some point you're a big star, you just don't give a fuck. And there is no such thing. And that was like, holy Christ, this is how it's always going to be. It was crazy. So there's nobody in town. So it's like probably the first night or so. And he got done with two shows. And he goes, come on, let's get out of here. Let's take a walk. Let's go. And at the time, the MGM Grand was right next door to the Aladdin. This is before the MGM Grand burnt down a couple months later, literally. And we walk down, and it's chilly. You know, it's Easter, and Las Vegas is hot in the day, but at night, Las Vegas is chilly. And we go to the MGM Grand, and it is a morgue. There's not even hookers. There's just the maitre d' is there, who Rodney's known for years and years and years. And the maitre d' kept calling Rodney Roger Danglefoot. And I mean, every time he said it, I laughed, and Rodney was getting madder and madder and madder. Like, sorry, that's fucking funny, right? So we're walking back to the Aladdin. It's next door, but in Las Vegas, between two major hotels, it's a long walk.
Right.
And in my memory, the sun's coming up. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but it was chilly. And we walk along Las Vegas Boulevard South. We're just about to the Aladdin. He says, you got to take a leak? And I said, well, of course. You know how much beer I drink. I could always piss. He says, come on. And instead of going into the Aladdin, into the lobby, into the bathroom, like a couple of human beings, we walk behind the Aladdin where the dumpsters are. And the dumpsters are the size of a small McDonald's. They're huge dumpsters. And he walks over to this dumpster and takes it out and starts pissing on the dumpster. So what am I going to do? I'm over here. I take it out and I'm peeing on this dumpster. And we're standing there in the cold of Las Vegas taking a leak. And he turns to me and goes, welcome to the big time.
Wow.
I said, do you know how many times I'm going to tell that story? He says, have a fucking party. What do I care?
Yeah.
I've been telling a story for 40 years. I mean, that's so Rodney. That's so Damon Runyon, the big time, you know, not welcome to show business or welcome to superstardom. Welcome to the big time.
Yeah, that is so great. That's a great story.
Isn't that a fun story?
Wonderful. You're so lucky to have had that relationship. You know, that. How long did it last? 1 week or 2 weeks?
We were away there for 2 weeks. And then we had a falling out. It's a whole long story. I'm not going to go into it. But
That's okay.
And then I would run into him here in the two baggers, funniest fucking thing ever. You know, I can never be mad at you. It's too good. You know, too good. Aww. It's the best joke I ever had, you know.
Yeah, it is a great joke. There is something about a perfect joke, obviously. You know more than I would. I mean, it's almost like poetry. It's perfect. This is what
you know,
is.
I was lying in bed with my girlfriend asleep, and the phone rang at like 4 a.m. and my buddy called from Peru. He was in Peru doing cocaine, selling cocaine, and some guy that was down there doing the same thing named Tennessee Bob told him that joke. It was the Tennessee two-bagger. She was known as a Tennessee two-bagger. That's what it was originally. And my friend called me up and kept me on the phone long enough because he knew I was drunk. There was a good chance I was drunk. He kept me on the phone long enough that I would remember the phone call and remember the joke, right?
Wow.
And then years later, when I started working at a studio, the Alessi brothers, these guys I knew, they said, oh, that's an old Southern expression. It's been around forever. But it didn't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the Spanish brought tomatoes. You know what I mean? Like, there weren't tomatoes here yet. You know, so it's a big deal to have tomatoes. Yeah, you know?
That's right. So wait a second. So the moment when you saw him go to the box office and ask about ticket sales, that was like an epiphany for you because you thought what?
I thought that he wouldn't care. Why would it matter to him? You know, he's a superstar. And he's going to do his show. It's, you know, it's like Bob Hope checking the TV ratings. But I'm sure he did. You know, but you think that you get to a point where that's not an issue.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure what I thought, but I just knew that wasn't how I thought.
I love that. It's a really specific epiphany. And I
it was so specific. It was like, holy shit. You know,
right.
Like,
and I had that epiphany when this guy I used to date, he had a show on Broadway, and he told me, you know, very matter of factly, you know, he, of course, it cost him out of pocket like $88,000. And I was like, what? And he goes, you know, it cost me $88,000, you know, to get the theater, to get the props, to get what I needed. And I was like, you paid for your show to be on Broadway.
Now I didn't know what
he said. Of course,
he wasn't an investor. He was a guy doing his own show on Broadway.
He was a comedian. It was Yakov Smirnoff.
Ah!
He bought his show. You know, he paid. I don't mean he bought a show, but just
like
anybody.
No, I know exactly what you say. He four-walled a show on Broadway a lot, you know.
I know.
He wound up taking it to Branson, right?
Yeah, something like that. But the point is like, I produce shows all the time. Now I get it. Of course I get it. I've been with the Improv over 3.5 years, and I do shows at Flappers every month as well. And I have done tons, you know, I've done thousands of shows. I mean, this show alone, you're like my 712th guest or something. So, I mean,
you didn't have to try and make me feel special.
You're very special.
No, but I know what you're saying. It's like Yakov Smirnoff on Broadway. Wow, that guy's made it. You don't know that he's writing a check for $88,000. That's the point you're making, right? Like,
that's
when
exactly
I sent my three albums to Howard, Howard's like, wow, this guy's got three comedy albums. He must be somebody. I mean, yeah, he's somebody who made his own albums. That's
well, of course. I mean, and it's the same with like billboards and stuff. He used to buy billboards of himself. And
yeah, and it's like, wow, the guy made it. Look at him on the billboard.
Right.
You know,
no,
I totally get it. Get it.
I work in a bookstore, and I've seen authors on the night of the launch, they'll buy up all the stock in the store just so that they can get number one in the store that week. They'll buy their own stock.
You name the, and it's not even a scam. It's like if you don't do it, you're competing with other people that do it. It's like, well, you know, it's like rugby players. I remember my cousin, I'd say they're all taking speed. He says, yeah, they have to because the other team's taking speed. You know, you got to compete, you know, like these. It levels the playing field, and the playing field is never level. You know, it's crazy, and people cheat in ways that you just can't even believe, you know, and but it never stops being interesting. I'll tell you that.
I'll tell you that. A couple of weeks ago, I have a show at Flappers. This is a couple months ago. I've told some of my friends this. Well, I had to tell people because it's unbelievable. Now I'm going to tell you, and now my whole audience hears this. I am producing a show in the smaller room. Jay Leno is in the bigger room. I'm talking to two girls. This is before the show.
Tell me where this is. Los Angeles?
Flappers. Yeah, in Burbank. Yeah, Los Angeles. Okay. Flappers Comedy Club. So I'm talking with these two girls who are coming into my show. The one girl, she messaged me on Facebook and just said that she really didn't have any money and would I, you know, consider comping her. And so I did. I comped her two tickets. And now I'm talking with these people outside of my room. Now, Jay Leno comes out to go to the bathroom and I go up to him and I say hello because I know him from whatever. And then I go into the room. I say goodbye to my friends. Enjoy the show, whatever. Now my show goes on. And while I'm hosting the show and I'm doing my stuff, I don't see those girls, but you know, whatever. I forget all about it. We had a great night. Next day on Facebook, she writes me back. She says, Christine, I'm really sorry that I didn't go to your show last night, but Jay Leno came out and was chatting with us and told us he'd buy us dinner if we went in the main room. So they did.
My friend Mark Madnick, that created Final Draft Software, has a name for that. It's called, I don't know whether it's a typical Los Angeles thing, called BBD. You know BBD? Bigger, better deal.
Yeah.
They got a bigger, better deal.
So they
sailed right past you, and it's like.
I know, but I just thought Jay Leno, why would he do that? Because. That's where, why he
because
is where
that
he is.
The same reason Rodney check, you know, that's
I know
you, know, you got to pick up every marble. You got to pick up every marble.
Fuck. God damn.
What really drives
me
crazy? He's not a pussy hound. He wanted them in the show. So he had bodies in the show. He wasn't going to fuck anybody. He hadn't fucked anybody since 1941.
No,
that's
right,
what really
course.
Drives
no,
me
it's,
crazy.
It's about
you know?
The people. And but I don't know about that anymore. Of course, I'm older. So maybe it's still going on. I guess it's still
wait,
going
now
on,
let's stop with this. How old are you?
My God. I'm 81.
25?
I look good for my age.
How old are you? You're allowed to say.
My audience knows. I'm 55.
You're a speed limit. I swear to God, when I turned 55, I was walking around saying, there's something weird. And I was in the middle of a show on stage. I said, holy shit, I'm a fucking speed limit.
That's double a good nickels.
One. 55. Hey, listen, you're a kid. You're a child.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, man. I don't know about that.
Tell me a little about you. You married?
No, I'm not married. I have a child. She's 14. So I'm very busy, you know, kind of raising her and getting her, you know, to a good place. She is in a good place. She told me yesterday she thinks she's going to be a DP. And I said, I think you should.
That is absolutely wonderful. I think that's terrific. And are you a working comedian, or you do that? You do this show, or you do both? Or
I do all of it, man. Just like you said, you just take the gig, take the gig, take the gig. I take them all. And, you know, when I had my daughter, I took off a good 11 years. But I started this podcast, and I've still always performed to, you know, a certain extent. But I definitely, obviously, put her first. And I'm certainly glad I did, because I knew I was.
Did you have your child with a comedian?
No, he's a, like a creative director guy. He's another artistic type, though, for sure. For sure. And he.
So you still have a relationship with him? Is he all right?
Yeah, we're only about a block apart. Yeah, we're friends. He went to film school, and now my daughter's going to film school. She's only 14, and she's in a cinema arts program. So
that's great. So Yakov Cherkov is not the father.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus, no. All right, listen, we got to wrap this up. You crack me up. You guys head over to jokeland.com and find out all things Jackie Martling. And then, of course, follow him on Twitter at Jackie Martling, and follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. And tell your friends, would you? Tell your family.
I always tell people, because people always have questions. I always tell them, I answer every email I've ever gotten. It's led down so many ridiculously great paths. My email is jokeland, J-O-K-E-L-A-N-D, at AOL.com. People write and say, that was bullshit. This was bullshit. This is true. But then I send them back the proof or I explain the story. And they're like, holy Christ. Number one, I can't believe you wrote back. And number two, I can't believe you had a story. You know, I came out with my book. I have a whole second book in the computer, the, you know, unpublished
That's
stories.
Great. Because That's it's, exciting.
It's Sophie's Choice. It's like when you're doing a comedy album, you can't use all the stuff you got. So, all right. I'll never shut up unless you hang
no,
up
No, I
me.
Think that's fabulous. And you do. You keep working. You keep putting it out. You're a terrific energy. You got a great energy.
Well, thank you, sweetheart.
I'm just saying, fingers crossed, at some point, I would love to hear you back with the gang. Okay, that's it. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, back with the house. No, that ain't happening.
I know it isn't.
If I ever walked into that studio.
There's, you know, nobody's been in the studio for 2 years.
If we all were in the same studio, me, Howard, Robin, and Fred, we're all in the studio. I used to call in once in a blue moon 10, 15 years ago. After 2 seconds on the phone, we all fell into place. Like click, 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 click.
Yeah.
If I ever walked in there, we would instantly be on fire. And if Howard got one call or one email from somebody saying, wow, it was really great to hear Jackie back on the show, that would wreck his fucking year. And I know that sounds bitter and shitty, but I'm telling you. He had a 60th birthday party and he invited people he met 3 days before and didn't invite the guy that helped make him a superstar. Because if one person had said to him at his birthday party, wow, it's great to see Jackie again, it would have wrecked his night. And I know that sounds pompous, and that is why you will never see me. You know, Howard, Robin, Fred, and Gary, none of them are in my documentary.
Okay, but none I just want to tell you something. First of all, you're all alive, so never say never. Second of all, I don't know the man, but I don't think he's possibly, like we said earlier, thinking about you. It's not about you. It's about him.
Oh, please.
I know, but I'm just saying you're giving him energy, like to say that he actually has that energy about you. Like, oh no, I purposefully did not invite Jackie to my 60th birthday party for this reason. I don't think he even thought of it. It didn't occur to him.
No, you're way off. Way off. And it's not pompous. It's too hard to explain.
I know, but I guess it
wasn't like the next day Jackie wasn't at your birthday party. Oh, I forgot. No.
Think it wasn't about whether he thought of it or didn't think of it. I think it's that, no, I mean, I don't think it's whether he thought of it or thought about it in a nefarious way. I'm saying I don't think it occurred to him because you weren't in his life.
Well, you're wrong, but that you are a true fan of his, and I respect you for that. I totally respect you for that.
He had a book out a couple years ago with all the interviews from the past, and it really came together nicely. You know, I mean, you know, all these books. As a Stern fan, I read all sorts of stuff, and it's just nice to, you know, as a fan of a show or whatever, just to follow up on people, see where they are, what's going on, and
I'll tell you a very interesting postscript to that. I don't follow the show. I never, you know, never did. So I have no idea what's going on there. And he never, nobody ever knew that I had a book out or I did this or that. Like, I'm like, nobody even dares, you know, utter my name hardly, from what I hear. So at one point, my publisher called me up and said, man, your book got a great bump in sales. What, you go on a TV show or what'd you do? What'd you do? I said, you know, I always promote it when I do podcasts and I do radio shows, but nothing out of the ordinary. What had happened was Howard put out that book, whatever it was. And if you buy a book on Amazon, beneath it, it says people who bought this book also might have purchased this, and had my book, Stuttering John's book, Artie Lang's book. So here's all these fans buying this book on Amazon. They've already got their credit card and their mouse on the pad. They had no idea I had a book out. And for one click and $16, they had another Stern-based book. So I think Howard would jump in front of a bus if he knew how much he helped me. I don't know. I don't know how many sales we got, but I don't sell that many. So it was a
You have hundreds of reviews. Amazon specific is hundreds of reviews, and most of them are 5-star, really. But I'm quite sure, because I do follow Howard, I'm positive he wouldn't blink an eye. He wouldn't care. He doesn't have he's so focused on himself. You know, he is who he is. He's a narcissist. He just thinks about himself.
Well, in that, saying that, it would, but I was totally exaggerating there. No, but I'm totally exaggerating that.
Yeah, he wouldn't care. But listen, and it's not just Howard. It would be anybody like that. Like Adam Carolla is just famous for not letting anybody else talk, and who gives a fuck about anybody else. And of course, yeah, it's the Adam Carolla show. But still, you would think that he'd have a little bit of interest or empathy or anything, but he doesn't at all. It's just about Adam, and it's so specific. And I'm a fan of his, too. So I'm just saying it's not, you know, it's just that type of guy.
It's the person. You know, I've never really criticized Howard for the way he is, because if he wasn't the way he is, he wouldn't be who he is.
All of it.
You know what I mean? He had to be that animal to become the animal that he is.
Yeah, but
you know, he couldn't have done it halfway, you know.
Right? I understand. That's what I'm saying, you know. And to an extent, fucking loser Yakov Smirnoff. Sorry. Now you hear my bitterness. No, but it's true. He was.
Did he leave you high and dry?
He ghosted me like a millennial.
Now, how long ago did you date him?
Oh my God. It's like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It was a long time ago. Long time ago.
No, that's not a long time ago. The last time I saw Yakov Smirnoff, I came out of the Funny Bone in St. Louis in 1985, and across the plaza in the theater. I ran into Jay Leno, Larry Miller, and Yakov Smirnoff.
That's funny.
That were appearing in the theater across from the Funny Bone.
Right on.
And that was a long time. So he'd been around a long time.
Don't I know it? Don't I know it? But listen, I guess what I'm saying real quick is, at the end of the day, it's like water flowing through us, right? So these things happen. And
they're all so much fun.
Yeah, it's all good. Fun. It's all good. But we have to go back to that premise you said earlier. Nobody gives a fuck about anybody else. So I just want you in your heart to know, as a Stern fan, that he doesn't give a fuck. I mean, he's just not even in his world.
I know.
And when they mention your name on the show, it's always like in a passing. That's not derogatory, not negative. It's just in passing, because you were one of the major players in the first 15 years. I mean, so you are a creator that made him who he is as well. So it's I'm just saying, it's a give and take. I love you both. I just want this all to be sympathetic. I don't know, what's the word? Simpatico. As
I got you. I got you.
Everybody's alive. Everybody's
Gary
alive.
Called us the fa- he called us the founding. We're the founding. Now I'm doing Rodney. Fourth, we're the founding fathers. You and me and Robin and Fred and Jackie were the founding fathers.
Well,
we're founding fathers.
It's fucking true. It is true. And I'm just thrilled to have met you. And so thank you again for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
It was my thrill. And I can't wait to meet you in person. Awesome. And have a few laughs. And you wish your daughter the very, very best. I don't know if there's anything I can do, but if there's anything I can do for her, aww, do not hesitate to have her ask me. Because, hey, when you help somebody, you never know when it's going to come back and bite you in the ass and help you. You know what I mean? Awesome. It's like it's really fun.
You're
I got to ask you, did you read Cliff Nesteroff's book? Do you know who he is?
Mm-mm. I'm going to write it down.
I'm going to email you. It's called The Comedians, The Low Life Scoundrels, Alcoholics and Drug Addicts of American Comedy. It's American comedy from vaudeville till present day. I guarantee. You ever listen to books on tape?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
You will. Next time you will love this book. It is just. Just to hear what an asshole Jerry Lewis was made it worth the price.
I can't wait.
Guy Cliff knows everybody. I'm not annoying. He's like a 35-year-old Canadian. How the fuck he knows all this? But he knows everybody.
All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Jackie Martling. Thank you,
Jackie. Jokeland at AOL.com. Write, complain, bitch, moan, whatever you want.
All right, you guys, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning Shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.